Hello, everyone. Welcome to this Support Technical Exchange session. The topic for today is performance tuning using CPLEX Optimization Studio IDE. Today's presenters are Guan Feng and Nikila Arcallgood. Guan and Nikila have worked on the iLog Optimization Technical Support team for over 7 years and have been helping customers with all IBM iLog optimization products, including CPLEX Optimization Studio and ODM Enterprise. They have worked on models and customer applications developed over a variety of industries and are very experienced in analyzing overall performance and tuning mathematical models using IBM iLog optimization products. They also work closely with the development team on analyzing challenging models and providing suggestions for possible enhancements. At this time, I would like to turn the session over to Guan.
Thank you, Valerie. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining today's session on performance tuning using CPLEX Optimization Studio IDE. In this session, we'll be trying to tell you our experience with the real customer requests, and we'll try to show how we usually deal with those common issues, and hopefully you can try to learn some new process from it. Slide number two, please. Okay, here is today's agenda. Firstly, we will try to introduce the CPLEX Optimization Studio IDE very briefly to those who are not yet very familiar with IDE, and then we'll be trying to introduce performance tuning with two tools available in the IDE. One of them is the profiler tool, and the other one is the tuning tool. After that part, we'll be introducing some of the other important features of the IDE, and then we'll be ending with some of the installation tips for CPLEX Optimization Studio IDE on Windows, because we saw some common issues from this aspect. Slide number three, please. Okay, now we'll be starting the introduction to CPLEX Optimization Studio IDE. Slide number four, please. Okay, before getting into the IDE, we want to slightly introduce the optimization programming language, OPAL, which is the actual language we use to write models within the IDE. This is a very straightforward language that you can try to use without doing some real programming. And OPAL basically provides a clear separation between input data and the model. If you look at the sample code on the right-hand side of the slide, you can see there are some dots which presenting the fact that the data would be pulling from the outside interfaces, such as data files or maybe databases, based on some of the other definitions defined in a separate file. This way, you can try to separate data from a model, and you can try to flexibly switch one data source to another without too much hassle. And the OPAL language itself also provides very easy access to connect to different databases, so you can easily switch from one to another, just try to do some performance analysis, or maybe change your environment from one to another. Slide number five, please. Okay, now we are going to be introducing the CPLEX Optimization Studio IDE. The IDE itself is a Eclipse-based development IDE used to create OPAL models written in OPAL. So it basically provides efficient syntax highlighting so that you can just modify your model very easily. The development studio also directly supports solvers, CPLEX and the CP optimizer, so you can easily switch the engine from one to another. And it also provides access to connect to the other applications, such as SPSS modeler. And as a recent new feature, it also provides the option to perform remote solves, because we have a new offering in our product line, which is called CPLEX Enterprise Server, where you can actually launch a solve on a remote machine, or maybe just a local solve server, something like that. And lastly, the IDE also provides a lot of useful tools for you to debug your models from different aspects. And we'll be discussing those things a little bit later in this slide. Slide number six, please. Okay, here is a very brief view of the IDE itself, and I hope you have already maximized your window so that you can see it a little bit clearer. On the top left corner, it is the OPPO project area where you see all the files belong to this project. In the top middle part, it is the place where you write model, and you can easily see, okay, it's probably not really so easily, that it provides you some syntax highlighting feature and helps you to try to identify possible syntax errors. And on the top right, you can see some outline of the model, which basically shows you the model elements, such as the data elements being defined, or for example, the constraints you define, things like that. On the bottom left, it is the problem browser, which will be introduced later in this set of slides. And on the bottom right, which is a big window with a lot of tabs, this is a part where we'll be covering a lot of the tabs later in this presentation as well. So let's move to slide number 7. Okay, now we'll be introducing the performance tuning tool. Tuning using the profiler tool. Slide number 8, please. Okay, before we start, we need to introduce what is the profiler. So the profiler itself is a OPPO feature that collects statistics of memory and the time spent for model generation and model optimization. So this is not really too different from a usual profiler, even for programming languages. But however, for this profiler, it's basically very well tuned and designed for the OPPO models. And it covers every single aspect of the total performance of a model. So which means that it will start when the model is being generated and being extracted and being solved, and even including the post-processing part. This tool is available in the IDE and the command line. So in the IDE, it provides an additional feature, which is the highlighting the cells that are with significant amount of resource consumption. Based on some of the threshold value you can customize. And for platform without IDE, you can also try to access the profiling information by using the OPPO command line option dash profile. This is also available in API in case if you have to use the API function. And as one reminder for Linux users, they should consider use the IDE instead of the OPL command line interface because we have already provided IDE interface on Linux. The profiler outputs are populated automatically in the profiler tab. It is enabled by default, so you don't have to do anything extra to enable it unless you try to disable it explicitly. There's an IDE feature called Save Result. It can actually save your profiling result for further analysis. One of the very important part is that once you save the results, it will not really flush the previous ones. So they will be saved based on the timestamp. So you can actually have a collection of the profiling results, and you can try to compare them one against each other, and try to see whether you're actually making some progress or not, or making the progress you actually wanted. The very last part is that you can also try to copy the result to the clipboard and maybe save it to a file and use your favorite tool. For example, try to use some text processing utilities and try to invent your own way to try to digest the information. Slide number 9, please. Okay, now here we want to introduce the profiler tab. Here is basically a sample output of a run that you will usually see after you have solved a model. So the main part is a big table, which you can see that the profiling information are being displayed and organized hierarchically and chronologically. So the idea is that when you see the lines, you can see they are being displayed based on the order they are actually being executed by the OPPO generation. So because one element you wrote in first doesn't really mean it is going to be generated first. So this sometimes gives you a very good view of how the OPPO model is being generated. And besides the resource consumption of each individual item, it will also provide you some aggregated results. Sometimes this is going to be useful for you to have a brief idea about which part, let's say, among model generation and model optimization, which is consuming more memory and which one is consuming less, relatively. And if you look at the top right corner, you can see a very small box highlighted by a blue line, blue box. This one is a little box that you can click to bring out the threshold at adjusting interface. So by default, the thresholds are being set to 20%, but however, you can adjust the values independently to some value that you think you should be focusing on. And you can see there are a lot of cells being colored as red. This is the part where the highlight works. So this one will be, so based on the threshold, the cells exceeding certain values will be highlighted so that you can just focus on those ones that are more attractive to you for a certain purpose. Slide number 10, please. Okay. Now here we want to describe a rough process about how we want to use the tool to analyze the performance issue. We want to highlight the fact that this is from scratch, because usually when you get a model, you don't really know where the place where you can get some improvement. So it is not really too difficult, let's say, from your perspective or from a support perspective for performance tuning, because nobody knows which is the part we should be focusing on before we actually have any specific results. So here is the rough process we use in our support job that will be used to analyze the customer's models, and we hope you could be benefit from that. So in this process, before we start, we want to determine a threshold to focus on potential less efficient code, so that we can be focusing our attention to those piece of code first. You can define your custom threshold value, or maybe you can try to use a one suggested by the OPPO IDE, which is 20%. I think that one is pretty reasonable for a daily job. And after you have finalized the threshold, you should run a performance, you should try to just to do a simple run with profiler enabled to understand the current situation. After you have the run ready, you should look into the results and see if the performance is reasonable or not. So in this step, you should be focusing on the issues with most significant impact. This is the place where you need to adjust threshold and to make sure you are highlighting the cells that are potentially interesting. And then the next part is going to be thinking about the complexity of your formulation data, and then see whether the profiler output actually matches your estimate. After that, if there's no good match, you should be thinking about how to improve the formulation or coding to lower the complexity. After this step, considering this is an iterative process, you probably want to reduce the threshold value and see if that could be bringing up some more interesting items. Or maybe if you think there are too many things being shown right now, you probably want to increase it a little higher and try to focus on the ones that are with the most significance. Slide number 11, please. Okay, here we are trying to demonstrate the whole process with some real example. But here, unfortunately, because of confidentiality issue, we cannot really provide you a real customer example, so we have to write something by ourselves. But we are trying to provide every single piece of code we hear to you in these PDF files so that you can try to do some tests later by yourself. So here is a very simple model. On the right-hand side, there are some type of definition we have used in this sample. And on the left-hand side, we have some tuple sets. And we also defined a set, an array of decision variables, and we have two constraints. Slide number 12, please. Okay. After we have this model, we did a initial profiling run with the default threshold, which is 20%, and here is the way it looks. So in this process, The most important thing I want to suggest here is that we should be focusing on the lines that are corresponding to one single open element. So for example, one specific constraint, or for example, one specific data element. So as an example here, we have a cell highlighted by blue dotted line, which is 27%, corresponding to load data section in this model. This one is not really the current focus right now, because this one is the aggregation of the initialization of several data elements. Because this is the aggregated data, so it doesn't really bring enough significance at this point, because we want to focus on the real specific implementation issues. So instead, we want to focus on the two cells highlighted by the blue solid lines. One of them is 20% of the memory usage, and the other one is 97% of the runtime, corresponding to the extraction of the two constraints. So these are the things we'll be focusing on right now. Slide number 13, please. Okay. Right here, we want to focus on the performance analysis of the extraction of constraint C2 first. Before we go into the details, we will be looking into the data of that we use to formulate the constraint. So in the first place, it is a tuple, basically have two sub-elements. One of them is type T index, and the other one is a T prop. So with the one step further, you can see there is a map defined with as a set of T map, and with some width constraint, or more like consistency check, with two enforcement. One of them is a prop in properties, and IND in indices. So we want to demonstrate this relationship in the chart. So you can consider the T-map is the whole possible values of T-map is more like a two-dimensional array. One dimension is the set of values for prop, and the other one is set of values for IND. And then you can just imagine map are just the sum of the selected elements from the two-dimensional array. I hope this is able to give you some reasonable understanding of the data. Slide number 14, please. All right, so given this basic understanding of the data, now we should be looking closer at the exact formulation. So here we want to see for all the props, we want to examine whether for each combination available in IND, actually matches the map by using a membership test, and then we will impose the constraint. Here, one of the common issues is that all possible values of the tuple element IND are from the set indices because of the width keyword. But however, the cardinality of the indices might not really be very comparable with the cardinality of map, and very often the cardinality of map is much smaller than one dimension of the two-dimensional array, imaginary two-dimensional array. So very often it's not necessary to traverse the set indices completely for every prop value in properties, because that is very less efficient. Slide number 15, please. So as improved the formulation, instead of trying to traverse the set of indices, what we can do is to traverse the set of math which achieves something equivalently. This is the implementation we have been showing in the upper half. And in the lower half, we use a different approach, which we just try to traverse the map in one shot, and then we try to add the element to some proper array defined based on the property values, and then try to use them later without major efforts of the membership test. So both of the approaches works, and both of them will work very much more efficiently when the cardinality of map and indices don't really match. And in some of the real examples of submitted by our customers, we can achieve some sort of 85 runtime reduction just because of this simple reformulation. Slide number 16, please. Now we want to try to examine the performance of the extraction C1, which accounts for 20% of the memory use. Okay, so here we can see we're just traversing the set indices and try to add a constraint if one of the element weight is greater than a certain value. Okay, the problem of this formulation is that if you do it like this, no matter whether the if part of the statement is true, a constraint will still be added to this model. So this is not going to be very efficient. If for most of the value in the indices, this constraint, if the condition part of the if constraint is false. So before we actually want to test the value for all the set of the values in the indices set, we probably want to filtering out the values that we're interested in, and then we try to construct the constraints. This is exactly what we are doing in the improved formulation of the first version. And there's a second version, which is showing on the bottom of the slide, which is to convert the constraint to bound. It is arguably to see which one is better, because if you have the first one, you might have a slightly more more control about the bounds, but if you don't have to do any relaxation, or if you don't have anything very explicitly being used, let's say being treated later part in your process, maybe converting them to bound is a very good idea. Slide number 17, please. Okay, with those changes we have mentioned before, and then we do a second run with profiler enabled. Now here is how it looks like. Right now you can see that the extraction of C1 and C2 use much less amount of memory and time. And now the major culprit becomes the initialization of the top element indices, which is highlighted by the solid blue line. This is just one cell, so we'll be looking at that part in the next step. Slide number 18, please. Okay, so here is a very here are the codes related to this data initialization. So we can see this is just a very plain data reading and data construction. So there's not really too much to improve. So we can consider this part as reasonable, and this is not worth any further looking. So we can just move to the next step. Slide number 19, please. Okay. Because we didn't change anything in the previous step, and because the numbers looks reasonable, so we don't really need to do a second run. We can just directly reduce the threshold to 10% for both of the time and the memory consumption. And now, by doing that, it highlights four additional cells, and we'll be examining them one by one later. So slide number 20, please. Okay. Now we want to examine the performance and of the initialization of the map, which accounts for 80% of the time. So here we are trying to show you the code where how the map is defined. Actually, we have already covered in the constraint part. So the idea is very simple. It is very similar to the initialization of indices, which is very plain and straightforward. There's not really too much to improve. But however, because of the consistency check, it actually consumes some time. So if you really want to squeeze out some performance, you can try to disable the data consistency check. In earlier versions, you have to remove the WIS part, but starting from Cplex Optimization Studio version 12.5.1, there's a new settings, data checks, which can instruct Opal to skip this part if you are sure that the consistency has been guaranteed in some other places. So for example, it can be guaranteed at a database by implementing some of the constraints there. Slide number 21, please. Now we want to focus on the performance analysis of the initialization of copy of indices. This accounts for 70% of the memory. This piece of code is relatively simple and looks a little bit stupid, but we just want to demonstrate that very often you can have some temporary data usage, so we want to simulate this use case. And the key idea we want to bring up here is that temporary data can actually be ended even before the model is being generated or So as a possible improvement, when you are sure that the temporary data is no longer being used in the model, you can insert a very simple execute block and just try to call end to these simple data. And then you will see some relatively memory reduction. Slide number 22, please. Okay, now we want to focus on the analyze of objective initialization. This accounts for 12% of the memory. So here you can see that the declaration is very simple, and basically because of the way we're using the objective, so you can see everything is reasonable and nothing much to improve. All the variables are being used in the constraints and objectives, so you can really easily remove any one of them. So there's not really too much to do. But however, if you do have a sparse formulation or you do have a sparse model that you don't actually have to model every single decision variable, you should consider some sparse formulation. We actually have one section in a white paper mentioned in the reference section in this at the end of the presentation that actually talk about the sparse formulation. We also have a section in the documentation and the sample in our distribution talk about the sparse formulation. So you can look at those sections when you have some time. Slide number 23, please. All right. Now we want to see the performance analysis of CPLEX pre-solve part, which accounts for 10% of the memory. Actually, the point we want to highlight here is that this number is not really related to open model generation, but this is part of the whole CPLEX solve. So because this is the important feature of CPLEX that is critical for CPLEX performance, so one shouldn't be concerned too much by this number unless you are seeing some overall performance issues with CPLEX or CP Optimizer. So the idea is that this number should never be taken or considered alone, and it doesn't really mean the smaller the better. Sometimes it is actually the opposite side. So you should consider this together with the engine performance overall. Slide number 24, please. Okay, this is the third profiling run with the code improvement that we have suggested earlier, which is about ending temporary data usage. So you can see that everything has been highlighted or more or less examined already. And one of the other things we want to highlight here is that by doing the ending, you can actually see some negative memory usage highlighted by the cell by the blue solid line. So that's a negative one. So this actually shows that ending temp data really helps. Slide number 25, please. Okay, after the previous slides, we hope you have already got a rough idea of how this methodology works and how we can use this to try to find the potentially less efficient codes. But however, we want to highlight some of the part that this methodology hasn't been designed for. So one of them is that the numbers reported by the OPPO profiler are not very precise. So because of the modern computers are really fast, so they are not really accurate for the byte level or millisecond level analysis. And usually, if you really want to get a very accurate result, you should try to find bigger data sets. And the bigger the numbers are, the more accurate they are. The other thing I want to highlight here is that this methodology is more for the tactical issues rather than the strategic issues. So it detects possible inefficiencies in implementation of certain data elements or maybe model elements very well. But however, it doesn't really always give enough hints to some more strategic problems. So for example, let's say if a element in the table has never been used in your model, which actually can be removed and to reduce overall memory usage, if you have something like that, there's nothing going to be shown in the profiling results. Another example is that if your model is symmetric, but the model hasn't been formulated to take full advantages of it, if that is the case, you're not going to be seeing enough hints in the profiling results. Or let's say if your model is a multi-stage model, can be decomposed into smaller models and have one model for each stage. If that works faster than having a one huge big model, but if we're not using that, by doing a simple profiler run like this, you're not really going to be getting any hints. Number 26, please. Okay, so although it has some limitations, but we hope this is still going to be useful for you, And besides the suggestion that we have given earlier, we want to highlight a few more here. One of them is that please do try to profile models with realistic data sets to understand whether the models would be scaling very well in the target deployment environment. Because because models with different scales of data could behave very differently, so it is very important to use a realistic version of data. And the other suggestion is to use multiple data sets, because it is very possible that one data set only stresses part of the model instead of the whole model. And we actually have a sample in our distribution that can be extended to manage the runs of multiple data sets in one batch. You can try to look at that into more details later. And the very last suggestion I want to give here is that you should be doing profiling periodically. And please don't do it in the very last minute. Otherwise, you might have to revise a major part of your code to achieve the desired level of improvement. Now I'm passing it to Nikhila for the rest part of the presentation.
Thank you, Guang. So far we had a look at how the profiler tool helps us do the performance analysis, especially during the model generation phase. Now we'll take a look at another tool called the tuning tool, and this is especially useful during the solve process when we use the CPLEX solver. Slide 28, please. So what is the tuning tool? The tuning tool is based on the tune feature that's provided to the CPLEX solver. And what the tuning tool would do for you is it provide guideline on some baseline performance tuning CPLEX parameters that it would suggest on either a single model or over a set of models. When I say set of models, you need to remember they should all belong to the same class. That is, either they should all be MEPs or they should all be LPs or QPs. You cannot mix the class of problems. There are ways to customize the tuning tool. It provides options to tune with some prefix fixed set of CPLEX parameters. And in most cases, you would be actually customizing the tuning tool. So how do you actually imagine using the tuning tool in performance analysis? So here's the scenario. You have a model. Go ahead and do a default run and see if it runs to optimality. If it does, then use the tuning tool to see if it runs faster. The main focus of the tuning tool is to improve the solve time of your models. But if your model, say for example, in the default run did not run to optimality, then you might want to first examine what errors it shows. If it's an out of memory error, then you might want to first turn on the memory emphasis parameter, use that as a fixed CPLEX parameter, and then call the tuning tool. Or if it is a marginally numerically unstable, then you might want to first turn on the numerical emphasis parameter, use that as a fixed set of CPLEX parameter, and then call the tuning tool. The tuning tool basically, like I said, tunes over multiple models. So in OPL, in most practical cases, you would have either one or two model structures, and you would have several data instances. So it is especially useful to get either an average performance over the set of mathematical models or get the least worst performance. So that's the tuning measure that you can actually customize with the tuning tool. So you have options to choose either the average performance or go for the least worst performance. The other good aspect of the tuning tool is that it also produces the save files, which are the binary format CPLEX models, for the OPL-generated mathematical model. And you can use these save files to do offline analysis using the CPLEX Interactive Optimizer. Please note, this is based on the tune feature with CPLEX, so it is not yet available for CP Optimizer. So you can use this only for models that call the CPLEX solver to solve. Now let's go ahead and take a look at as to how to invoke the tuning tool. We are on slide 29. So here's a snapshot. On the left-hand side of the screenshot, I have showed how to invoke the tuning tool. Since we are going to be invoking the tuning tool over multiple run configurations, we'll be invoking it at the project level. So you basically right-click at the project, and you have the option Tune Project. Select that, and that brings up the tuning wizard. On the right-hand side of the screenshot, I've shown how the tuning wizard looks. Top half shows the multiple, shows all the run configurations that are part of your project. Choose one or multiple, the ones that you actually want to include in your tuning set. Next comes the fixed settings. So when you say none, that means you're going to start off with the default CPLEX parameters. But in most cases, like I mentioned, if you have already decided, say, for example, you have decided on the tolerance that you want to set, so then you're going to set that value in your OPL settings file and provide that under the fixed setting. The third and most important thing you need to do is provide the name to your results file. So essentially, once the tuning tool finishes, it actually writes these CPLEX parameters into the OPL settings file, and you need to provide a name to this results file here. So once you have provided the name, click on Finish, and this invokes the tuning tool. Slide 30, please. Now, how to examine the results. So like I said, once the tuning tool completes its job, the results are stored in the results OPL settings file. So on the top half of the screenshot, I have shown the results file here. If you have used the OPL settings file, then you might be aware that any non-default parameter in the settings file would actually be highlighted with a red asterisk. So that will easily help you find out which are the parameters that have been modified. So as you can see in the green highlighted box on the left-hand side, it shows the strategy, the MIP strategy and the MIP limits were modified. To examine which strategy was modified, I've opened that up, and you can see whatever is in bold has been modified. It's been changed from the default value. Here it is, the MIP heuristic frequency has been increased to 50 from the value 0. So it's actually easy to examine which parameter got changed. Apart from that, below of the screenshot, you can see the engine log, where at the very top it shows where the save file has been stored. This is a temporary storage, but if you want to store it permanently, you can always make a change again in the OPL settings. Again, the engine log, the current output, as you can see, is a very minimal output. It basically shows that there were three tuning runs done. But again, you can customize this. You can go in for a much more detailed reporting where it actually shows which CPLEX parameters were changed, and that sort of gives you a better analysis on what the tuning tool did with your set of models. Slide 31, please. So like I said, in most of the cases, you will end up customizing the tuning tool. Apart from setting the fixed parameters, like I've shown here in this screenshot where the tolerance I have modified, the tuning parameter as such can be slightly customized. To access that, it's directly under the mathematical programming tab, tune. We'll start from bottom up, so we'll start with the first, that is the tuning time limit. You need to remember that the tuning tool essentially invokes your model and solves it multiple number of times. So if your current model were to be taking, say, for example, 1 hour, by default, it goes for about 6 to 8 runs, so it takes 6 to 8 hours. And if you have, if you're going to do this over a set of models, then you got to consider that as the added time over it. So in ideal cases, if you're doing it over a really large model or a set of number of models, then we would advise, to start an overnight run, and by morning you have the set of results to examine and take a look. So you will have to pretty much change the tuning time limit if you want a quicker analysis. The one above that is the tuning repeater. Tuning repeater applies only if you're using a single model to tune. Essentially, what it does is it basically informs the CPLEX to modify the rows and columns of this model to see if there's a more robust solution available. And this is oftentimes useful. So if you're doing it over a single model, then you can do it, increase the tuning repeater to just go multiple runs. The one above that is the tuning measure. As I explained earlier, you can either go for an average performance over your set of models, or you could choose for the least worst performance, depending on what your end goal is. So that's how you change the tuning measure. The one above that is the tuning information display. So by default, it is a minimal reporting, as we saw in the engine log. It just tells you how many times the tuning tool invokes the solve process. But there are ways to report much more detailed analysis, like you can actually ask the tuning tool to give you the CPLEX parameters that were modified for each of these runs. So this is the way to customize the tuning tool. All you're doing here is set these parameters, save the .ops file, and in the screen where I showed how to invoke the tuning tool under fixed settings, you will just provide this file name, and it will automatically apply the customization. So this was a very brief introduction to the tuning tool. It's a very powerful debugging tool that you can use, and oftentimes when you're examining it over a set of models, it's hard to find out which parameters would work on all of them and get an average performance. So the tuning tool is an excellent guide to help you get this analysis. Slide number 32. Now we'll take a very brief look at some of the other features that the IDE provides that can help you do performance analysis. Slide 33. It starts with a very basic problem browser, but a very, very handy tool, especially when you're doing model development. Essentially, what the problem browser does is once the data has been initialized and when you solve the model, the data values are displayed in the problem browser. So even your solution values, so the addition under the addition variables, the solution values and also the reduced cost and sensitivity range gets automatically populated. Correspondingly, for the constraints, the slack and dual values are also automatically populated, so you do not have to call any special functions to do it. The problem browser takes care of it. So especially when you're doing model development, this is essentially useful to do a very quick check to see if the actual if the end model is representing the actual problem that you had in mind. Slide 34. Conflicts and relaxations. Oftentimes, we have seen with extremely large models, our models end up being infeasible, and there is more than one constraint in conflict. The IDE helps in these cases where basically it automatically finds the conflict set. Under the conflicts tab, it displays the constraints that are in conflict. If you were to select any of those constraints automatically in your model, that gets highlighted. So that helps in the debugging. And if you were to go to the relaxations tab, automatically the suggested relaxations are also provided. Slide 35. Couple of things to remember when you're doing conflict and relaxation analysis. By default, all variables and label constraints are considered in the relaxation process. But if you want to restrict it only for the labeled constraints, you can always customize that using just an OPO settings file. But one thing to remember is that only labeled constraints are considered. So if you do not label your constraints in your OPO model, they will not be part of the conflict and relaxation search process. So we always recommend to label your constraints. Slide 36. Another very useful, handy tab, which is the statistics and progress chart. So once you have your model structure, you have your different data instances, and the end mathematical model will actually be of different sizes depending on how big your data instances are. And it's oftentimes useful to know how big your mathematical model ended up being to understand how long your solve process is taking. So the statistics tab just gives you that. It tells you how big the model is. So here I've just given an example of a MIP. So it is giving me how many constraints were generated, how many variables, what type of variables I have. It gives you some information also on the solve process, like the number of nodes that got generated, number of iterations, the solution pool, etc. A similar statistics information is given even if you were to use the CP Optimizer solve. On the right-hand side of the screenshot, the progress chart is available. This is, again, a useful tool when the solve is going on. You can see how the model is progressing. Since this example shows it for a MIP, the yellow dots on the black chart basically represent wherever a feasible solution was found. Here it was an integer. Here it's an integer solution. And the green line is basically indicating the evolution of the best integer value, and the red evolution of the best value of the remaining nodes may not necessarily be the integers. So this is, again, a handy tool, especially when you're doing the solve process, to see how your model is progressing. Slide 37. Now we'll take a look at another debugging tool called the solution pool. This is, again, a feature that we provide using the CPLEX solver. Oftentimes, it's useful to examine a slightly suboptimal solution than the one mathematically optimal solution. Or it might also be worth examining alternate optimal solutions. So if you were to do this analysis, then the solution pool is a handy tool because by default in the IDE it stores any feasible solution that was found during the solve process. But if you want a much more extensive analysis on that, we have a populate method in CPLEX that you can invoke through the IDE as well that calls in the phase two of your MIP search. And it helps find more feasible solutions and alternate optimal solutions. There are ways to customize the solution pool and also provide some filters. Diversity filter essentially is once your MIP search is completed, you can set a few reference values and see how you can find solutions either similar to that or vastly diverse from that. And similarly, a range filter is once you have your MIP search completed, you can put in a new constraint and see again how your solution varies. Slide 38. Okay, so now let's take a look at how to invoke and use the solution pool through the IDE. So where can I find the solution pool? Easy, go to your problem browser. That will display the number of solutions that were generated and that are in the solution pool. The statistics tab will give you the mean objective value. This is often useful to find out how similar or diverse your solutions are. And if you were to select a particular solution in your problem browser, the solutions tab will give you the solution quality and the actual solution value. Slide 39. Again, so now this is a snapshot view of how it looks in the IDE. On the left-hand side of the screenshot, I have shown the problem browser. So this is by default, it generated two solutions. If you were to maximize your window, you can see that the solution objective was at 1,480, but there was a feasible solution also found at 1,520. So depending on your tolerance limit, it might be worth examining examining the feasible solution as well. And if you want to do that, if you were to just highlight that solution in the problem browser, in the solutions tab, as shown on the right-hand side of the screenshot, the solution quality and the solution values automatically get displayed. Slide 40. Now let's take a look at how to call the populate method. Again, you have to use an OPL settings file. On the top right-hand side of the screenshot, I've shown the settings file. Under the tab Mathematical Programming, Mixed Integer Programming, there's a Solutions Pool tab that you have to select. There are several ways to customize the solution pool, but one thing to remember is you need to check the populate solution pool in order to activate the populate method. And as you can see, there are ways to customize it. You can change the absolute gap for the solution pool, relative gap. You can control the number of solutions you want to be kept in the solution pool, etc. Now to look at the results. At the bottom half of the screenshot, I've shown the statistics tab to just highlight in the green box the solution pool, where now after calling the populate method, it ended up generating 30 solutions as opposed to a default of 2. And the mean objective is now at 1,653. Again, in the problem browser, you can see number of solutions were generated. Clicking on any of that in the solutions tab will automatically populate the solutions value for that. Slide 41. So that was a very brief overview of some of the other debugging tools that are available in the IDE. Based on some of our PMR calls, we thought we will highlight a few tips on just a few tips to remember when installing CPS Optimization Studio on Windows, slide 42. So here are just a few tips to consider before installing. If you're on Windows 7 or Windows Vista platforms, please always run the installer by right-clicking on the executable and choosing the option Run as Administrator. And for better compatibility, we recommend that you choose a non-program files location. Here I've just given an example of CILog, but it could be any folder where you have complete read and write access. And please check your path environment variable and ensure that it does not have any non-ASCII characters in it. And ensure the installer is not getting blocked by the security software like antivirus or firewall. And in order to use the Studio IDE, you will require the Visual C++ runtime library. Slide 43. So in summary, in today's talk, we introduced two main debugging tools. One is the profiler tool, and we found that we basically showed through a few examples how it was a very powerful debugging tool, especially during the model generation phase. We have the samples that we used in today's talk. We have actually added it to the slide deck at the very end. So if you want to go over the tutorials again and play around with it, please feel free to do so. We introduced the tuning tool, which is, again, a very powerful tool if you're using the CPLEX solver and during the optimization solve phase. And then we also give a very brief overview of some of the other features that are available in the IDE that can help you do performance analysis. Slide 44. We have a few references for you that we used for this talk, and they're also helpful to understand these tools better. We have a white paper on the which gives some examples and samples on efficient OPL model development. Our documentation links for the profiler tool, tuning tool, and the information center in general. Slide 45. We have a few more links for the WebSphere product resources. If you want to listen to the replay of this talk or the other past webcasts, please visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcast link. We have the developer works for much more detailed technical analysis on the product, user groups for more product information, and we have education assistant that provides demos and tutorials on the that helps you use the product better. And if you need to reach us, the support, please go to the service request SR tool and sign up for the My Notifications to know more about the product. At this point, I would like to hand it back to Valerie.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nikhila and Guan, for a great presentation, lots of valuable information. And finally, remember to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with subject WSTE subscribe. Once you get the mailing list, you can subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve future webcasts, please let us know at that same email. We welcome any ideas you may have. I am moving into the question and answer session now. Okay, we have no questions. At this time, we will conclude the webcast. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange website. Remember, within a few days, a replay of today's presentation will be available on this site. Here is some supplemental information the presenters wanted to provide. This is referenced from slide 11. I would move through these for your viewing. You can download the PDF file if you'd like to reference these in more detail. At this time, I do thank you again for joining. This concludes the webcast. You may disconnect now.